And this meant, for themselves, they had to realize this divine nature in their own lives. And for a Freemason, that meant, on the one hand, seeking inner spiritual improvements, self-perfection, making themselves moral people, self-respecting individuals, shunning all sorts of vices, such as were, quite frankly, widespread among nobles, such as gambling and heavy drinking and sexual carousing. In a way, one might describe Freemasonry to these young Russians as a type of religion in the sense of a mystery of sacredness in the world that didn't offend their sense of reason, didn't offend their intelligence, nor their growing sense of individual dignity. On the contrary, that seemed to nurture and recognize this. Second obligation for a Freemason was no less important, namely a duty to one's fellow human beings. And this was rooted in the Judeo-Christian concepts of love and charity, elaborated, of course, by the Enlightenment and its ideas of the equal worth of all people. Freemasons were therefore expected to devote themselves to the well-being of others, to make sure all people could realize their dignity. And this meant not through charity, which was seen as degrading, but to uplift people through education, for example, or journalism, as Novikov chose, but also to thinking possibly about more fundamental political and social changes. And these ideals really helped inspire Novikov as a publisher and a journalist. And now more than ever, he saw his work as awakening people to this voice of truth that he now heard, spiritual, moral, ethical. And he began in 1777 to publish a truly remarkable journal, which was called Morning Light. This was like nothing Russia had ever seen before, not a light, humorous, satirical journal, not one that took the time to flatter the ruler, but a serious philosophical and moral journal whose goal was to promote virtue through openly moralistic writings, to chastise what they called weakness, imperfection, and vice. And the message was clear and profound and potentially quite subversive. For example, in the introductory editorial that Novikov wrote, which was called appropriately, since it was the main theme of all these writings, on the dignity of man, and much of the journal echoed this same message, he argued that human beings, contrary to the claims of the church, are not miserable fallen creatures, or as the church liked to put it, a rotten and putrid vessel of original sin, but are the majesty of God's creation, made in God's image, and therefore equal in dignity and by logic in rights. Now, these aren't original ideas. They pervaded Enlightenment thinking. They helped, needless to say, shape the American Revolution underway at this very moment. This essay I've talked about was written in 1777, and later the French Revolution as well. And even in Russia, these aren't completely original ideas. These were becoming increasingly familiar, especially to the growing number of educated Russians, especially Freemasons. What really is important about Novikov is not his originality as a thinker, but his ability to spread and popularize this Enlightenment humanism among Russia's growing class of the educated. This outlook of his, this moral outlook, would prove increasingly important in the 19th and even the 20th centuries. And in practice, his ability to spread these ideas among the educated was truly prodigious. In 1779, he moved to Moscow to take over the lease of Moscow University Press, at that point the most important publishing house in the country. After Catherine allowed in her new rule of 1783 individuals to set up private publishing houses, he did just that, set up a private publishing and printing firm, mostly with his Masonic friends, not, by the way, unlike the famous American Freemason and printer-publisher Benjamin Franklin. He also maintained on the side a secret printing press for publishing Masonic religious literature, but he became already, even without all this, Russia's biggest private publisher. He also continued to edit and contribute to various journals, many of which he himself published. He also actively promoted a book trade in Russia to make sure that his various books could find readers all over the country again. No one had done anything like this before. He became Russia's first great book trader as well. He also published children's books, and not surprising, with the same basic ideas about the dignity of the individual were embedded in these very ideas written for children. And on top of all that, during a terrible famine that took place in 1787, he began to organize a major philanthropic campaign of relief effort, becoming the first and important philanthropist in Russia as well. Now, Novikov was not alone in any of these efforts.